With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com. Rock him a thing. Rock him a thing.
Rock him a thing. Welcome to the Depth Chart Podcast. My name is Freddie Maggard. I'm joined by Nick Roush in Louisville. And Nick has a guest in studio. I've also joined by the two other has-beens on the podcast, Andy Murray, fullback, Jay Dortz, outside linebacker. Gentlemen, how are you doing? Nick Roush, you go first.
Good. Good. We got Alex here showing him the podcasting ropes. And so he gets to get some podcasting information from some of the best out there, and also Freddie Maggard.
There you go. Jay, hey. You doing a good, man?
Good, man. Excited about last week, and then heading to App State on Friday and North Carolina on Sunday to watch my dogs play field hockey. So, yeah, it's all
there
good.
You go. Andy, y'all off this weekend?
We are off, and we put a beat down on Maryville last weekend that I thought would be a much tougher game. So, Center's got a nice squad.
Good.
They're going to win some more games, that's for sure.
Good deal. All right, let's get rolling, man. Kentucky beats Missouri 35-28. Did so by not looking great, looked good. So much to improve on. But let's get focused on the Chattanooga Mocs. FCS or 1AA, however you want to call them, out of the Southern Conference. 1-1 in the season. Lost to Austin Peay 20-10 in the opener. Beat North Alabama 20-0. Go down the numbers. I mean, 269 offensively allowing, around the same defensively. Not a big play offense, on and on. So, Appalachian State. Jay's got that in my mind. Montana beats Washington. ETSU beats Vanderbilt. On and on. There's been eight FCS teams that beat Power Five or FBS teams this year alone. I think Kentucky's going to win. I think that's already decided in my opinion. But what would a positive win on Saturday look like to you guys? Is it 50 points? Is it play a lot of players? Is it to see Bo Allen get some game action, no turnovers? What is it? Jay Dortz, what do you want to see from the Cats against Chattanooga on Saturday?
Strong fundamentals, no mistakes. You know, clearly they outmatch UT Chattanooga. You know, we're a better team, man to man. Obviously, it looks like they've got a decent defense. Maybe the best we've faced so far, possibly. Got a couple big playmakers on there. But I just like to see them come out and play mistake-free football, strong fundamentals, 30-plus point win. Play, you know, don't show up flat. Come out and right from the start, just jump on them and bury them. You know, it's something we haven't done well in the past.
Yeah.
This team needs to do that. They had the chance last weekend, didn't do it. And it's something this team needs to start taking that identity and stepping on, you know, the throat when they can.
Yeah, because Kentucky is not known as a team that finishes off opponents. And Mark Stoops talked about that. Should have finished off. Missouri had that fumble, Chris Rodriguez fumble in the end zone. Could have gone up 28-7. Ball game is different at that point. Nick Roush, what do you want to see from the Cats on Saturday that would make you come away from the game with a positive feeling going into South Carolina week?
Two things. Zero injuries. That's most important. Yeah. And second thing, zero turnovers. Tired of turnovers. Kentucky's offense has checked just about every box through the first 2 weeks of the season. They've really got the run game going last week. They've hit on explosive plays. Now you just got to take care of the damn football. Put two arms on it when you're near the goal line. you know, at 3 points contact, like cover that ball up and, you know, maybe take a little something off those slants, Will, because his interceptions are, I mean, they were identical. Same exact play, same route, same ball coming out 100 miles an hour, slightly behind him. Take care of the football, Cats.
Yeah, you know, to me it looked like the Cummings, the pass that went off Cummings' hands, it was a little behind him, by the way, that led to the interception by Missouri. I thought Kentucky went back to a similar, if not same play later, and I thought Cummings did a good job of settling down in that passing lane and not running through the area.
Got a first down. It was third and 10, I believe.
Yeah, that's a development that's going to happen. Andy, what do you want to see from Kentucky Saturday against Chattanooga?
I'm kind of with Jay. You know, I think for so many years we've gone in there and let teams like this play with us. And, you know, just sort of to me it needs to be a fan day and play for the fans and pound these guys, play clean, you know, have some explosive plays. Just get everybody excited about the future, not take a chance on having a little bit of a downer and going backwards. And I think from Saturday, you look at some of the things that happened in that game, and we have definitely erased our demons from a culture standpoint. I mean, there were so many times in that game Saturday where this team could have folded like some of our teams in the past, and they didn't. So I think that the next step for this team is to come out in this game, own these guys, take care of business, get a bunch of young guys some playing time, and make it about the fans and beat these guys, you know, like they should be beat.
Turnovers. Turnovers. I think if Kentucky turns the football over Saturday against Chattanooga, then we're looking at a trend. I don't think two games can constitute a trend yet, but – you know, five turnovers in total against ULM and Missouri is concerning. Andy, what, as a running back, as a fullback, somebody that carried the football on numerous occasions at the collegiate level, does it get in your head about not fumbling? And does that become – you become more mechanical and less fluid as a runner when you're focused on not fumbling? Talk us through that.
You know, I think it can probably get in your head. I think the one thing about – you know, if you look at last year, that fumble in the Ole Miss game sort of turned the season. I mean, when A.J. Rose dropped that ball going into the end zone, our season kind of took a different swing after that play. And I think, you know, with Rodriguez fumbling the other day, he runs so aggressively, and he is a punishing runner. And I think that kid's always looking for contact, which can be dangerous, and holding on to the football. Because, you know, he's trying to run people over with his legs, his arms, his chest, you name it. He's trying to punish people. And that can kind of haunt him from a ball control standpoint. But, you know, I think I'm with you. I mean, if we have turnovers this weekend, they're going to have to do something to address it. And what you can do, again, it is probably more mental than anything, but I'm sure they do ball security all the time in practice. I wouldn't call it fluky, but there's definitely something in the mechanics that those guys, you know, just need to concentrate on. I forget who – one of the coaches last week said something about they have a rule on their team that nobody's allowed to reach for the goal line with the football.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just – I think that's a lot of video and a lot of hype, and you see kids doing that stuff all the time. It's almost – it's not showboating. But it's borderline showboating. I think just get the ball in the end zone and celebrate after the whistle. You know, I mean, these kids are almost celebrating before they get in the end zone, and reaching for the goal line is just, I don't know, reach for it with your face mask. You know, reach for it with the ball.
That's asking for trouble because if you fumble, the ball goes through the end zone, that's a touchback. Jay is a defensive player that had to face Emmitt Smith. I mean, so many other running backs. If you were facing – a running back on any given Saturday that had fumble issues, did your tackling change as far as wanting to punch the football out?
Yeah, absolutely. I look at that fumble last week in the first one, and I think sometimes a fumble just happens. I mean, that guy put his helmet right on the ball. That's a tough scenario. You know, he's dragging people to the end zone. He's got a guy on his leg. Guy literally put his helmet right on the ball. I mean, sometimes that's just going to happen. The second one, you know, that's a case where it got punched out, and not, you know, we certainly did look for that. And you knew if somebody carried around like a loaf of bread or carried away from their body, that there was great opportunity. And so it would change your approach, especially that number two guy coming in and number three guy coming in, because you knew the likelihood you could possibly get a turnover pretty quick.
All right, sounds good. We're going to go into a segment called Are You Concerned or Are You Not Concerned? Nick Roush, are you concerned that Kentucky has only produced one turnover in two games this season after leading the SEC with 22 last year?
No, because they should have had two last week, two more. You had Jalen Geiger get alligator arms in the end zone. I think that's a little bit of a rookie mistake, you know, the moment being pretty big. He hasn't played a lot of football, so I think under normal circumstances, they're making that play. And Cedric Dort, he's got to be the heady senior and not give him that extra shot, because it was a terrible pass. It was underthrown. Ty Agin there was ready to make the pick. So with the fumbles, you know, the ball hasn't bounced Kentucky's way. I mean, I think they fumbled a screen pass, and it just went right to the lineman. So, you know, some of that stuff is to do with luck, and it's going to go their way. But Kentucky's at least been in positions to make more turnovers. They just haven't finished the play yet. And I think they ultimately will.
Andy, are you concerned or not concerned about Kentucky's defense only producing one turnover so far?
I don't know that it's – I thought they would produce some this past weekend just because of how much they were going to put the ball in the air. But that quarterback proved to be as probably as good a quarterback as we'll see all year. And the running back as well. I'm kind of glad they're in the rearview mirror, really, that both of those kids almost took that game over. And but I kind of thought our defense would be a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more on the positive side with the turnovers, just based on the experience they have. But I wouldn't be concerned with it. I think it will come. I think this defense gets better. That's the beauty of all of Stoops' teams, really. They do get better as the year goes on. I think you're going to see everything about our offense improve, and our defense will just continue to improve. That was a tough matchup last weekend. I didn't realize how tough that offense would be. But yeah, those two guys are special, really special.
Yeah. Jay Dorch, Jordan Wright goes out of the game. J.J. Weaver is on a pitch count. Don't want to play him too much. Are you concerned or not concerned about depth at the edge position for Kentucky? Because Devontae Robinson, also playing that hybrid linebacker, nickel defender, he went out for injury. Are you concerned about the edge, depth at edge for Kentucky?
I'm a little concerned. However, that's kind of with an asterisk, because I do think we've got some young guys, you know, the Trevin Wallace's and you know, thrower and some guys that we can move around, and they seem to be just, you know, football rats. They want to just consume information and learn how to play the game, not just on the field, but cerebrally. And I just feel like that they're going to figure it out. And that's one of this, you know, Brad White and his team, that they have they are really good at developing players. And I think for the first time, we've got a lot of versatility in our second level defense. And, you know, we've got a lot of different type of players, and, you know, hopefully Wright comes back quickly and Devontae does as well. But I think we're in a position finally where we're next man up. We've got talent, and Brad White has shown an ability to identify that talent and develop them and get them in the right position. And I think, you know, going back to the turnovers, I'm not that concerned about that either. I kind of align with Nick here. You know, we've been spoiled with Lonnie Johnson and Westry and Eccles and all these guys at the corner position, especially, and go back to Mike Edwards at safety. You know, we have had an incredible secondary. And these guys have a lot of experience. Most of them do on the corners, but they don't have starting experience, and they're still trying to find their feet out there. And I feel like they're going to find a Denny, and some playmakers are going to emerge, and we're going to, the turnovers take care of themselves.
That leads me to my next point. Nick Roush. Are you concerned or very concerned about depth at corner?
I'm concerned. Yeah, I think like Kentucky's opponents are obviously going to attack that, you know.
Yeah.
I think on the bright side, and Jay brought it up too. I don't know who said it, but I don't know how many quarterbacks you're going to face that can exploit that, at least for the next month. You know, most of the teams Kentucky's play, they're going to try to run the ball to win. They're going to run the win, and those safeties really can cover up a lot of holes there, especially if Yusuf Corker really cranks it up a couple notches. So that's why I'm keeping it just at concerned and not very concerned.
Andy, how about you? Concerned or very concerned about the cornerbacks?
You know, I don't know. I think I wouldn't be concerned just because I'm a big believer in every kid that they've brought in on that roster. They know what they're doing when they bring these kids in. Now, experience is a little bit of a concern because that's – but from a talent standpoint, I don't think we have talent issues anywhere. I mean, I really think these guys are super at evaluating talent. And the kids that we have on that roster, you can see it when they bring subs in. I mean, we don't miss a beat when we substitute anymore. I mean, like Jay said, the depth is just unreal. And the proof is in the pudding. I mean, we're putting these guys – I mean, we didn't put a lot of DBs in the NFL in the past. I mean, and DB was always kind of one of those spots where, you know, no offense to anybody that's played for Kentucky, but defensive backfield was always – a challenge for us. I mean, and that's something that I just think any kid he's got on that roster that he's going to put in is going to deliver.
Yeah,
they might get burned once or twice, but they're not going to be a liability.
Right now, Cedric Dort, Carrington Valentine, starting cornerbacks. Valentine gets dinged up, has to leave the game. Quandre Mosley is a backup at both corner positions. He's played a lot of football for Kentucky. After that, the only available corner is Huey, the true freshman from Nashville. I would expect that there will be some experimentation at corner Saturday against Chattanooga, maybe move Jalen Geiger over there or Ty Asian just to get some reps. So I think that's a possibility of what we could see. But the only concern I have is depth, 100% is depth. I think the talent is there for the available corners. I just don't think there's a lot of them to play, and that's going to be a major concern for me going forward. A lot of talk this week has been surrounded how good of a job is the Kentucky is Mark Stoops or how good of a job is for the Kentucky head coach. Some have it as a top job in the country. Others, it's a top five, top 10. Where would you rate Nick Roush, the Kentucky head coaching job, as far as the overall opportunity, success, potential? Where does Kentucky rate in that list for you?
I'm going to rate this as my least favorite talking point ever. This was something we did during COVID in July, okay? This is not something you do in week three. I know the USC coach got fired. He should have been fired last year. I don't know what they did keeping him around as long as they did. And all these folks, like college football people get so caught up in the logos. And I at least do applaud the folks that point out the resources that Kentucky has, because that's taking away the logos. Now, they do factor in because it causes people to move around. And I think the point I will say is that I would be happy if James Franklin did not take that job, because I think Penn State might be one of the few out there that has enough appeal for Mark Stoops to consider it, just because it's got that traditional, you know, traditional powerhouse, quote unquote. It's close enough to where he recruits. So James Franklin, stay in Happy Valley.
So Jay, if Franklin does go to USC, would Penn State be one of those jobs that Mark Stoops would consider?
I don't see how you could say he wouldn't. I mean, he's going home. You know, it's obviously a great job. I mean, it's a high-profile job, traditional power. I don't see how it wouldn't be appealing. But I do think that, you know, the underrated part about, you know, it's they always point out that, gosh, you win 8 wins a year, and every now and then 9 or 10, and they build a statue after you and all that stuff, and that the fan expectation isn't win the SEC or win the SEC East division. It's just get, you know, 8 or 9, 7, 8, 9 wins, go to a bowl game, win a few of those, and you're good. And I think all that's kind of changing a little bit. But one of the underrated components of the job and at UK is where you live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is to me.
State, you know, College stinks. That town.
I've traveled a bunch with my work all across this country. And it's just fascinating as I've had people come here because they think of us as, you know, a bunch of hill jacks and no teeth and no teeth and marry our sisters and all that stuff. But it's fascinating when they come here and like, holy cow, man, this place is not only beautiful, but people are nice. The cost of living is half of where I am. And, you know,
there's stuff to do in Lexington. It's not just a college town, you know?
There is. And then, you know, they would consider me for the head coaching job and said, you know, the guys, this is a great job. And I would say, well, it depends on if I got Vince Merrill with me. I mean,
yeah.
If I don't have the right recruiting coordinator and the right staff, it could be a crappy job. I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's so many subjective components to that question or that statement that is, it's just tough to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I agree, Jay. And I think you hit it. You brought up the point that I was going to mention. State College versus Lexington is an advantage of Lexington. You know, I mean, if you're in State College, that's like being in training camp year round. I mean, it's football. That's it, right? In Lexington, you have different avenues to, you know, for socialization, as far as Keeneland, so many other attractions.
You're close to Louisville. Stoops has his own distillery now.
Yeah, yeah, he has his own. That's why I think he's here to stay until he's done with coaching, because there's so many factors within the community of Lexington.
Think about this too. You know, when we played, how many players came from north of Cincinnati? Not many.
Few. No.
Not many.
No.
And you think about what they've done. They've sold the number one conference in the country by far, and they're going up and they're taking players away from Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. Why? Everybody wants to play in the SEC. Well, gosh, you're within driving distance. Your family can come there and watch you play. You know, it is a great recruiting pitch when you start looking at things like that.
Andy, what's your take on all this?
Well, it's funny. I think it was one of the worst jobs in the country before he took it. And for all the reasons that you all have highlighted. And I'll be forever grateful to this guy for teaching Kentucky people what real football is and going to Ohio. I mean, we had nobody on our roster from Ohio, maybe two guys. And you talk about a roadmap success. I mean, he laid it out and he didn't care what star rating anybody was. They pitched our program and he's proven to be an unbelievable talent developer. And I think the pressure here versus the pressure at a Penn State, there's no comparison. And I think his brother will be the first one to tell him. I think Bob Stoops, what was he at Oklahoma for 18 years?
Yep.
Won a national championship in his second year and really was a non-factor after that. I mean, they went to some big bowls and all that, but they weren't necessarily a juggernaut in the national rankings and pushing for the championship every year. And the guy stayed 18 years. And I think it'll go back to how the guy was raised. I don't think he is about flash and all that. I think he loves what he's doing, and I think he loves this area, and everybody's embraced him, and there's a pride factor with him, too, that he's going to go down in history as the winningest coach in the school's history.
Yeah.
And, I mean, bowl games are a regular part of everybody's holiday plans now. I mean, it's just awesome what he's done, and I don't think the guy walks from it. You know, and what's he going to make next year? He's making almost $6 million, isn't he?
I don't know, but I take my media hat off and put my fan and alumni hats on, and I hope he never leaves. I love the guy. I want him to stay forever. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Freddie, I got a question, though. Since we're talking about Penn State, we're going to hear a bunch of stuff about how the whiteout game. They're whiting out against Auburn this weekend. Many people will tell us that it is the best atmosphere to watch a college football game. Are they wrong, Freddie?
Huh.
Hey, guys. Before you – I'm going to have to jump off, guys. I got some stuff cooking here I got to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You guys have a great week. Thanks for having me again. Go Cats. Cats by 90 this weekend. We'll see y'all.
All right, man.
Thanks, Andy. Love you, brother.
All right, man. You too.
Nick, I've always said that a night game at LSU was the best environment that I'd ever seen until I went to Texas A&M. I mean, I've got to see – I have to see it personally to see anything that would beat Texas A&M. Kyle Field, that was a tremendous, tremendous environment. So, I don't know. I've never been to Penn State, but the best one I've ever seen is Texas A&M.
Yeah, Texas A&M is just different, you know?
Yeah.
It really is. I've done LSU at night, but the game, I mean, it also helped that the game I went to at Texas A&M was an overtime football game. You know, I think there's a little bit of difference there. One thing that we got a glimpse of, and even though they aren't a good football team, I really think Florida State with Chief Osceola and the Tomahawk Chops is pretty cool. The Big Ten whiteout thing, something about Penn State just rubs me the wrong way. And so I don't know if it's James Franklin, but I don't like it. I would rather call Baton Rouge than at night than have to deal with stupid whiteout in the Big Ten or jump around at Wisconsin. I'd rather do that. Penn State, they can kick rocks.
Yeah. You know, Florida is a good environment too, as far as a home team. A sneaky good one in South Carolina. I mean, that place gets crazy.
That when Sandstorm's playing, that press box bounces, you know?
Yeah. Jay, Penn State, best environment in college football?
Well, I guess I've never been, I'll say, you're saying as far as like a viewing, looking cool and amazing, and as they got the drone flying over and all the white pom-poms, and yeah, man, it looks absolutely incredible, but I'm aligned with LSU and then Florida too. You know, people don't remember, but Florida was turf when we were playing.
Yeah, it was awful.
People don't understand how close the student section is to the bench. And when we were down there the last time we played down there. I'm sitting on the bench with my roomie, Christian Alt, and the offense is on the field. We're sitting there, and these dudes literally right behind us were pelting Chris in the helmet with ice. And next thing I know, I turn around, and literally Chris is going into the stand after, and I'm going after with him. We're literally, as defense, we're going up into the stands to help protect Chris and maybe get a few shots in. when that sound reverberates off that turf down in the swamp,
it's loud.
There's not a lot like it in LSU. You know, the thing about LSU, though, as a player, the stadium's pretty far off the field.
Yeah,
it's not right on top of you. But it's hard to go against LSU, you know, I think. I mean, night game, when those coon asses have been drinking for 12 hours. Because when we played, I don't know if you remember, Freddie, but we had the TBS game of the week, which was 11:30 Eastern time, a.m., 10:30 a.m. They were so mad because they couldn't tailgate like they normally do. But
Yeah, absolutely. And the smells, everything is different down there. You can smell the Cajun food, which is tremendous, by the way. Made me
the Mississippi
hungry.
River kind of gets that stink on you. Yeah.
I just thought it was pretty awesome. But preparing for this podcast, Any Given Sunday was on television this morning.
Yeah.
Which leads to our next
Willie
topic.
Beeman.
Next topic. What is your favorite football movie, and why can football movies never get actors that can throw the football? Jay, what is your favorite football movie?
Oh, man. You're going to laugh when I say it, but it's probably maybe because of my path. But Rudy, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you want to make me cry. You know, put Rudy on it every time, you know. Yeah, probably Rudy.
They don't show a lot of quarterbacks in that one.
No, they don't. Yeah.
Except, nah. I think Vince Vaughn, isn't he like the – I don't think he's the quarterback, though.
No, he's a running back. Nick, yeah. little history on Jay. Jay came to UK as a walk-on from Paducah Tillman and worked his way into a starting outside linebacker and was put on scholarship. So, that's why he went the Rudy route. What's yours, Nick?
Mine's Friday Night Lights, and it's kind of similar in that, you know, it came out when I was in high school. The music in it's great, and I really like the fact that, like, even though that they fight for this comeback, the things still don't go their way and they don't end. Maybe it's because I lost the state championship game too, but I like the realism in it because, like, there's nothing like that pain, that kind of emotion. That's what sports does. Like, it just amplifies your emotions. And I think for a lot of guys too, who are, you know, learning how to become men, you got to learn how to deal with those emotions. And that's what that movie, it kind of taught me, you know. And it wasn't just the partying and all the stuff. It was the emotion that goes into high school football.
I think mine is All the Right Moves. It's an old football movie with Tom Cruise in it, actually, as a cornerback. It was about a steel town in Pennsylvania, you know, going on hard times. And, it kind of fit where I was from, with the coal declining as I was, mm-hmm. I was going through high school, and the only, you know, us versus them mentality, as far as when we travel, it was the community's air community playing y'all's community. So, but a close second for me is Brian's Song. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh, I don't want to cry. So I refuse to watch it.
Talk yeah. about crying. Holy
cow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we were playing the state championship game, and the movie that our coaches showed us was Brian's Song. So,
instead of fired up for the game,
instead of tearing the doors off, you know, we were all crying. Injuries are a part of football, and unfortunately, and they happen. And depth is developed through recruiting. Players are developed through coaching. Kentucky's a great developmental program. Other than Will Levis, who is the offensive player that Kentucky could least afford to lose, Nick Roush?
Wandale. They're just – him and Will, they're just you can't replicate that stuff. I mean, I know Chris Rodriguez is an absolute bowling ball, and I know Luke Fortner is – one of those guys who does a lot more than we give him, you know, credit for. But Wandale and Will just do things that Kentucky doesn't have other players on the roster that can do those things. Like, Will Levis is lowering his shoulder on Blaze Aldridge and just balling him back. Like,
yeah,
Bowen Allen ain't doing that, you know. Josh Ali, he's got some juice to him, but he doesn't have the same kind of juice as Wandale.
Jay Dorch.
I'm going to go C-Rod. I think C-Rod. Fortner came to mind first, but yeah. I think they've done such an amazing job of recruiting offensive linemen and developing them. And I mean, the depth there is just incredible, even though there's a lot of youth. But I think without C-Rod, our identity changes drastically, and the ability to have a run, no matter who's on the other side of the ball. Have a run, set up the pass, and then having an actual true play-action pass attack. We can't do it without him. And I know there's some young guys are talking about, you know, Lavelle Wright or whoever, but, you know, Smoke is, as much as I like him, and it's kind of that boom-benny combination. You saw a lot of juice out of Smoke, you know, last week. I mean, he seems faster, seems more physical. But I think C-Rod's the guy for me.
You mentioned my guy, Luke Fortner. I think he does so much from the center position. He brings a wealth of experience. And I think replacing a legend at Kentucky like Drake Jackson is, it takes a special player, not only on the field but off. You know, Luke is a super senior, has 3 degrees from Kentucky already, and just very smart. I think he does a lot for that offense. Defensively, Nick, who is the defensive player that Kentucky could least afford to lose to injury?
Josh Pascal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I just – the defensive line wasn't the most disruptive last week, and I just can't imagine what it'd be like without Pascal in there. They just not other guys built like him.
Yeah, Jay.
For me, it's DeAndre Square. I just feel like that guy. You know, he leads, not in the same way that Pascal does, but the way he runs the defense, his experience and knowledge, and I just think he's invaluable.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with JJ Weaver. Even though he's on a pitch count as far as plays that he's in on games, but he accounts for 36% of Kentucky's quarterback sacks to this point, and tackles for leads the team and tackles for loss. I mean, he is Kentucky's explosive, dynamic defender, and without him, I think you even lessen that pass rush that's really not been there or wasn't there against Missouri. It was against ULM, but that's a different type of game, but I'm gonna go with JJ Weaver. Jay, the game this week is not on television. It's on ESPN Plus or SEC Plus. Have you figured that out? Are you going to be able to watch it, or are you going?
Well, I'm not going. I'll be in North Carolina watching my daughter play field hockey. So definitely want to tune in. And so I saw something in the SEC Network Plus. So I did what most 55-year-old men would do, is I called my son and daughter and asked them to figure it out for me and type it out on a sheet of paper. So when I'm down in North Carolina, I can figure it out.
Nick, see, I mean, y'all think I'm crazy because I can't figure this crap out. That's a perfect example, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get it, because even me, I don't have it set up, and I'm, you know, supposed to be one of these guys that knows what he's doing. So it would take me a little bit of effort to get it rolling. But, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of young people out there that can help. If you need a hand, Freddie, I know you got plenty of nieces out there that might owe you one or two. But, I'd be happy to come over and help you get it set up.
Here's the deal. There's going to be a lot of ticked off people this week about this. I'm just going to tell you right now. And it's – please listen to me. This is not UK's decision.
Yeah, it's so the SEC.
This is not a UK problem. This is not
SEC
a UK
money grab.
This is an ESPN SEC money grab, which I think is ridiculous in the year 2021, that American football, SEC football, has to be put on one of these platforms that it's not on normal TV. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. I think it's ridiculous for many reasons. Kentucky, I mean, if you put this on this kind of platform, you're expecting your viewing audience to have high-speed internet access. Well, there's a large portion of Kentucky that does not have that, right? And then you take into consideration people, Jay, you know, the same age as Jay and I, or older, that are not tech savvy. You got to realize, Nick, Jay and I went through high school and college without the internet. It wasn't invented yet. You know, Al Gore may have invented it, but it wasn't available to the world yet, right?
Right.
So a lot of people aren't tech savvy. That's no slam on us. That doesn't mean we're not smart. It just means that we're not familiar with it. We're not comfortable with it. It's awkward to me. And the fact that I have to work this hard to watch a football game is embarrassing in my point of view. And, you know, I take a couple considerations. You know, I have family members that live in extremely rural areas. They're not going to have internet to support this. They have internet, but it's going to freeze. It's not going to look good. My sweet 84-year-old aunt looks forward every Saturday to watching Kentucky on TV. She may think I still play. I don't know, but there's no way she can figure this out, and there's no way I can figure it out to show her. You know, things like that. I just don't think in today's age and times that we should make it difficult for people to support their football team, especially if that football team is in the Southeastern Conference. I think this is a tremendous fail by ESPN. I think it's a fail by SEC, by the SEC.
I totally agree.
Yeah, yeah. And sadly, this won't be the – this is the first, and it won't be the last.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I think it's stupid. I think it's tragic, and I just think it's wrong. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
It's okay, Freddie. I don't blame you. I think we got somebody special we're talking to today too.
We do. We'll get to that after our picks for the Kroger KSR game of the week. Jay Dorch, Covington Catholic goes to Beachwood. Beachwood's the number one ranked team at 2A, top five team overall. Cuff Catholic produced Michael Mayer, who's at Notre Dame, won a state championship or two here recently. Cuff Catholic Beachwood, who you got?
Yeah, Beachwood, man. I'm going with Jonesy, our old teammate. Beachwood, man. I got to go with him. It's, the guy's heels never touch the ground, literally. Am I right?
Man, he looks so uncomfortable walking around. Walked
up on his tippy toes, literally.
Nick Roush, who you got? Cuff Catholic Beachwood.
I got Beachwood, too. First ever Mr. Football back with Cam Hurt, the quarterback there. And I think, too, when you're the smaller school, Beachwood, going up against the bigger private school in the area, you're playing with a chip on your shoulder. They ain't losing this game.
Yeah, I was told to get there extremely early because this thing's a sellout and it's going to be a wild environment. I'm going with Cameron Hurgot, the quarterback from Beachwood, reigning Mr. Football. I know EKU is offered. I hope he gets some more offers. He's a fantastic player. Covered his game last year in the state championship. So there's that. Kentucky, the spread, has it been announced, Nick Roush?
No, they usually don't roll out the FCS ones like a day before.
Yeah, okay. So we can't pick that one. But I'm sure we all take Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope we don't have to – piddle fart around with them. And you know, Kentucky, they like to play with their food in these games. So just go out fast like you did against Missouri. Take care of business.
Hey, Jay, we're going to talk to my cousin next. My first cousin. This dude is a PhD at NASA. He started working for NASA when he was 19 years old. Other than the, how can we be related is my question, Jay.
That's a really good question.
I mean, seriously. Here I am complaining about being able to figure out how to watch an ESPN Plus football game, and this dude is working on the International Space Station. You know what I mean? And we're first cousins. We're not distant cousins. We're first cousins. So, hey, listen, it is what it is, man. That's crazy to me. But, Jay, thanks for joining us, brother. And I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Nick, we got Dr. Philip Meade coming up. And he's got a book that just came out. And it's already sold out, hard copy. And doing really well. So, Jay, you'll be interested in this book. It's about the culture within NASA after the space shuttle tragedy. And he led the NASA study into the organizational culture following that. So fascinating stuff.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Well, I appreciate it, guys. Have a great week.
All right, Jay.
Thanks. Care. And let's get to it.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're joined, Nick, by my cousin, Dr. Philip Meade, who I've talked about frequently on this podcast. every family has that one guy that, you know, a guy or gal that everybody's proud of. And Dr. Philip Meade is that in their family.
I thought PhD. That was you, Freddie.
No. That didn't last very long. I only had 3 years of fame. So your longevity has made you that way. But before we get talking about the book that you've written, The Missing Links, Launching a High-Performing Company Culture, I like to introduce, you know, the Big Blue Nation to you. So you went to Bryan Station High School. Then take us from there to where you are today.
So it was Lafayette.
Lafayette.
I want to represent my alma mater there.
There you go.
Lafayette High School. And then from there, enrolled in University of Kentucky, Big Blue. It was always, you know, growing up there in Lexington, I was a huge fan of the Kentucky Wildcats, dreamed of UK growing up my whole life. And while I was going to school there, I learned about this program called the co-op program. It's kind of like an internship. And through that, I was going to school for electrical engineering. I applied to the Kennedy Space Center down in Florida for NASA to be an intern down there, and started going back and forth every other semester, going down to Florida and working with them, and then coming back to school and going to school for a semester, then back to Florida and working for a semester. And so when I graduated, they hired me, and I guess the rest kind of is history. So really started with NASA when I was 19 years old. So I got 30 years with NASA, working with them, done a lot of really, really awesome things, worked on a lot of cool programs, helped to build the International Space Station, and worked on the shuttle program. And more recently helped to with this recent conversion into a multi-user spaceport. So done a lot of great things with them.
So engineering degree from Kentucky, then your master's and PhD is at Central Florida?
Yep, University of Central Florida. NASA sent me to UCF for that. So my master's degree is in engineering management. You know, shortly after starting with NASA, I realized I was doing more project management and really leading teams than I was, you know, designing and actual engineering work. And so I wanted to get more education on that. And that's what I got into. And then decided to just go on from there. And I got a PhD in industrial engineering. And that's what my PhD is in, and specializing in technology strategy.
Go Knights. Hope they take down the Cards tomorrow night. Woohoo! Let's go.
Now they're moving into the Big 12 too, right?
Hold on, Nick. He just talked about working on helping design the space International Space Station, mm-hmm. the shuttle, and you're going straight to Central Florida against Louisville.
Yeah. I mean, Freddie, you know how my brain works. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it is technically a football podcast, but we do have. I'm my big question that I have for the smart one in your family, Freddie, is Dr. Meade. I have this because you said you worked on all of these different things. When I think of NASA, I just imagine the Apollo 13 set. What are some of the bigger misconceptions that I think us normal folks have of NASA?
So yeah, the biggest misconception I think there's two. One is a positive for NASA, and one is kind of a negative. I'd say the positive, you know, that puts NASA in a positive light is until you go down there, I don't think the average human understands the scale of things. And so when you see things like the shuttle and the VAB, the vertical assembly building, when you see all that stuff on TV, everything is big. And so when you see a big thing next to a big thing, you don't realize how big everything is together. But when you walk up to it as a, you know, a normal sized human being, and you're standing next to it, and you just look up at it, you're like, holy cow, this thing is just, it's massive. And so the size and scale of everything, once you get down there and see it in person, I don't think most people realize just the sheer magnitude of all of it. And so I think that's one misconception. I think the other misconception is, and this was a big one for me when I arrived as this, you know, fresh faced 19-year-old kid, I was expecting, you know, stuff from, you know, Star Trek, right, with the doors that made the sounds that opened and all of this futuristic stuff. And I arrived to, you know, buildings that were built in the 50s and 60s with, you know, battleship gray steel desks. And, you know, we're slowly upgrading and modernizing a lot of that stuff, but a lot of it is also, you know, it's government. So it's a lot of it is government buildings, you know, so it's, Brady, you probably know that from your time in the military, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Challenger was a tough situation for all Americans, for the world, really. And your book, The Missing Links, deals with a lot of issues as far as organizational culture within NASA following that. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it was the Space Shuttle Columbia accident was the second of the two accidents that we had. And what happened was that a piece of foam fell off of the external tank, which is the giant orange fuel tank that's on the belly of the orbiter. And that happened about 81 seconds after launch. And we saw the piece of foam fall off, and we'd had foam falling off of that tank. You know, it was insulated because it's got all that, you know, cryogenic fluid inside of it. And so the pieces of foam had been falling off, which is part of the problem. We kind of gotten used to that foam falling off for a while, and we convinced ourselves that it wasn't that big of a deal. Well, this one hit the leading edge of the wing instead of the belly of it. And so it was a kind of a direct hit, but all we could see was this sort of a poof as it hit and blew up. So we couldn't tell exactly what happened. And so the shuttle got up into orbit, and it flew around for 16 days. And we didn't really know what the extent of the problem was. And we, you know, the cultural issues, which is really the accident investigation board, what they found after they conducted the review, they spent months going through, you know, looking at what caused this accident. The accident didn't occur until reentry because, you know, all of that friction from the atmosphere as it's coming back in caused the superheated gases to go inside of that wing and basically just disintegrate the shuttle over Texas and Louisiana on reentry. And it killed all seven astronauts. And the Columbia Accident Investigation Board said that as much as the foam that hit the leading edge of the wing, it was NASA's culture that caused this. And so they said we weren't allowed to launch another shuttle until we figured out how we could fix that the culture. And so that's when I was asked to lead all of those cultural and organizational changes at Kennedy Space Center for Return to Flight. And, you know, that was really terrifying, honestly, because one of the challenges I had was it seemed like it was a great place to work. It wasn't toxic. By my definition, you know, there weren't people screaming at people. There wasn't, you know, people goofing off on the job. There were a whole bunch of really smart, dedicated people that we had to force to take vacation time. It was, you know, how do I fix this problem? And so that's really what led to the creation of this book and the model itself was all of the work that I did to try to dig into what is this thing called organizational culture and how does it work? How can you take an organization where it seems like a great place to work? In fact, we were rated the best place in the federal government to work right before the accident. And yet the culture can still lead to an accident to kill seven people. And so that's really what the crux of the book is about.
Now, with the book and then with your speaking series and motivational speaking, it's targeted towards companies, businesses, athletic organizations, you name it, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to human beings and it's about human beings at the core. And that's what creates these environments, because an organization, it's a system, but it's not an
just any kind of system. It's not like your car, right? It's a complex dynamic system. It's adaptive. I was actually looking, it made me smile. I saw your logo for your depth chart, for your, you know, and it's got the cool, you know, the physics for the football being thrown. That we actually have that picture is in our book. We used a rock instead of a football. Sorry, we didn't use a football now. But that's one of the examples that we use, is that with a normal system, you know, you can use that physics equation and you can calculate, if you know all of those variables, you can calculate exactly where that football is going to land, right? That's a normal system. But if you think about an organization, instead of being a football in there, you're inserting a bird, right? And so if you toss a bird in the same way, the bird, it has its own brain. It's going to adapt to whatever you're doing to it. Well, an organization has human beings in it, and those human beings, they've got free will. They've got the mind of their own. And so whenever you, as a leader, you're trying to do things, you put them in an organizational system and you say, okay, we're going to go this way. We're going to do these things. Well, you know, people begin to adapt because they feel things. They're under pressures and they've got ideas of their own, and they've got their own, you know, personalities. They've got their own issues that they're dealing with. Their own defensiveness starts to come up. And so sometimes they're not even aware of it. And so a big part of what we help to do is help people and organizations uncover that defensiveness and increase that self-awareness so they can even see what's happening, what's going on for them.
Nick, seriously, I can't figure out how to watch UK's football game because it's on ESPN+. And this is my first cousin. How is this possible?
The apples, they fell on different sides of the tree. One rolled down the mountain and into the creek.
Oh, Dr. Mead, how can we find your book?
It's on Amazon. You know, it's we've had some really good success with it. It was it opened as an Amazon bestseller, and we're marketing it right now. It's 99 cents for the e-version right now for a limited time. So you can grab it if you want to pick it up that way. I think we may be sold out of the hard copies at the moment, but we'll be getting more of those in. So you can put your order in to get one of those as soon as they come back in stock. But you can find it on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. I think most of the major bookstores. But.
Well, thank you for joining us. I'm incredibly proud of you, and I'm fascinated about this book. And I hope you're going to hook your cousin up and send one this way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But thank you for joining us. I mean, Nick, that's fascinating to me.
It's great to meet you too. I've heard so much about you. Unfortunately, we never got to hear you school Jared on why the moon landing was real. But don't worry, the moon landing was real. You have at least two in your camp here now that are not crazy conspiracy theory.
All right, good. Glad to hear it.
Well, thank you for listening to this week's Depth Chart podcast. I hope we expanded your horizons with some fascinating talks from Dr. Mead about NASA, about the shuttle tragedy there, and about his book, The Missing Links. We appreciate you listening, and we hope you like us and subscribe and tell your friends about us. And we'll talk to you next week.